and welcome to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us we have Dr. Yolanda Graham. She is the Senior Vice President and Chief Medical Officer at Devereaux Advanced Behavioral Health. And welcome back.
Thank you, Laura. It's great to be back.
I wish you were back in person, but of course, we're doing this remotely today. Are you at Devereaux right now, or do you get to work from home?
No, actually, Devereaux has instituted a policy of remote working for all employees that are able to do so. Of course, we provide care for individuals 24 hours a day. So we have certain employees that are essential in order to make sure that the individuals in our care are provided for. But what we have done is we've looked at how we can practice social distancing for those individuals who are at work and our individuals that are in care with us. And then how do we rotate our staff? Because as we face potential exposure to a broad group of people, we need to make sure that there's a reserve of staff that is at home so that we can deploy them if our staff that are working become ill. So some of our staff are working remote and others are on site, and we're rotating that and making decisions as situations change.
And the situation, of course, is beyond our control. And that's what prompted this conversation today, because I'm thinking so many of friends, my colleagues, heck me, we're feeling anxious. This is out of our control. We're a little bit scared and we're all cooped up. And I can't even imagine what a child is going through at this time. And especially talking to you, a lot of these children will have intellectual or developmental disabilities. However, it really applies to all kids right now, this conversation.
Yeah, it really does, Laura. We're extremely concerned about, one, the kids that are with us and that are separated from their families. You know, how frightening is that when you know that there's a national pandemic and you're not able to physically see your family every day and have that reassurance? But also, we see the same level of anxiety of kids who are at home with their family and constantly hearing about what's going on in the environment. So one of the first pieces of advice that I give to families is make sure that you're limiting a child's access to what they're hearing on the news and the media, because it can really be overwhelming. And as we look at the different things that can cause trauma in kids, especially when they're hearing information they can't process, is that repeatedly hearing the same information is very similar to the brain as being exposed to that same traumatic event. So the anticipatory fear of the event causes just as much damage as the event itself. And so kids need a way to process that. And I think it's important to talk to kids in developmentally and socially appropriate ways about what's going on in the environment, but not to let their education come from the news or other media outlets. It's really important that parents moderate that.
Is social media, is that even a player for kids in this situation?
Well, you know, it really depends on the age of the child. For younger kids, probably not, but I can tell you from monitoring my own Twitter feed, Twitter is very active when it comes to coronavirus, and not all of the information is accurate, and some of the information is preliminary, but for people or older kids and adolescents who may be digesting that information, it may be difficult for them to know. And so making sure that for younger kids, we're using, you know, social stories are a great way to help kids learn about how we fight illness, why it's important to wash your hands, what does social distancing mean, how can we protect ourselves in the context of other illnesses that they may be able to understand, and how we teach them to be safe in the face of those other illnesses. For older adolescents who do have more access unsupervised to material, making sure that there's family time where parents and kids are coming together to explore this and talk about what they're learning and to process it. I think talking about it is a great way to decrease anxiety. And we have to be clear that kids who have intellectual or developmental challenges or differences may need to process it in different ways. We may need visual outlets for them. Pictures that show the changes to their routine, pictures that demonstrate hand washing, pictures that show the upcoming activity, which may be very different from their normal daily activity.
Routine is very important for kids with ID and DD, but again, for all kids.
Right, and kids aren't in school now. So that is a huge loss of structure for a lot of our kids. So one of the recommendations we're using with our parents, but also our staff members who are working with kids who have been traumatized and kids with other challenges, is to set a new routine. This is a new normal for us. We don't know when this is going to end. This is, even for parents who are working at home, a big change for how they live their lives and the access that their child has to them. It's important for families to maintain a routine during this time where there's a scheduled time for waking up, for having breakfast, for doing personal hygiene, having an activity, a scheduled time for lunch and other activities, and making sure that there is time during the day where you're limiting screen time and having family interaction time. You know, as I was sharing with you, I think I'm working more at home in terms of the number of hours than I did when I actually was at work. And so it's very important for me to set those boundaries in the day to say, this is my stop time to have dinner and interact with my family. This is my stop time for us to do family exercise. And even though this is the new normal for us and we don't know when this will end, kids are very malleable and will adapt to a new routine, but it's up to the adult to ensure that that routine is there.
You mentioned trauma, and of course that always comes up in conversation anymore. And especially for children who have had trauma in their lives, the loss of school and this routine or seeing familiar faces, that's a loss of security and that safety net that they really need.
Right, it is. And we see so much regression during this time. One of the things that worries me as a child psychiatrist is we know that during periods where we're socially isolated, there's a change in routine and families aren't able to leave the home, kids tend to regress. That is normal. And we see that in all children. They become more clingy, they're regressive, they become more demanding. And it really, I think, taxes an already taxed system with families who are dealing with their own stressors. And unfortunately, we see a rise in domestic violence and in child abuse during those periods of time. So for me, it's just as important for us to talk about how do we take care of parents' mental health so that they're available to focus on kids' mental health. And when we're going through changes like this, one of our greatest resources is being able to be aware of when we're starting to react in ways where we're not calm, and also making a conscious choice to increase the amount of praise that we're providing our children. When we're short-tempered, sometimes we have to train ourselves in how to respond appropriately. So using praise in a 5-to-1 ratio is a really good rule of thumb. For every time that you make a criticism or a critical remark towards your child or a corrective remark, you need to make at least 5 positive remarks. Great rule of thumb.
Oh, that works for everybody. All
that interpersonal works for everyone. I need that.
Almost everything that we're talking about today actually does apply to all of us, doesn't it? We're all big kids.
It really does. It really does.
So how do we take care of ourselves in this time? Because, trying to come up with 5 good things to say about your kid after a major fiasco, or your spouse or partner, and, you're thinking shooting daggers at them and coming. How do you maintain that ability to come up with 5 good things in the heat of a moment?
Well, Laura, it's probably harder to do it in the heat of the moment, and so it's easier to do it at a time where you're not emotionally activated. So one of the things that I do is I keep a gratitude list, especially in thinking about our facing a global pandemic. We're talking about possible loss of life, on a fairly large scale, which really helps me to think about what am I grateful for and being able to focus on that daily. So I do that at a time where I'm not emotionally activated, so that when I need to recall those in the moment, because my son is asking for the 5th time, when is my conference call over, I can think about praising him for his patience you know, because he's waited so long, you know, and because I'm grateful for him in my life. And so it really, I think, allows me to have those at the forefront of my mind to recall when I need them.
Is that having, but, is that like having that beach scene where you go to thinking about the list?
Yes, it's kind of like mindfulness. I was going to say ways that parents can take care of themselves. Having physical exercise yourself, practicing mindfulness, so that even if you structure it in for the first 5 minutes of every hour, I'm going to practice a mindfulness activity to decompress and focus on you. Eating healthy food, which, you know, many people can't get out or order food, so it forces us to, but really good for taking care of your own emotional health. Limiting the amount of time that adults are watching the news or engaged in fact-finding around coronavirus. I recommend engaging in news or social media outlets twice a day, limiting that time to 30 minutes or less, and that's it. Because we have to also control our own intake of things that are stressful and balance that with what we're doing to decrease that stress.
That's getting back to that not projecting forward potential ill results, trying to live right now in what you actually have. Is that what we're trying to do with mindfulness?
Right. I think we're trying to, one, stay in the moment and being aware of ourselves in that moment. So as I start to practice mindfulness and I focus on myself, I notice that my shoulders are tense, that they're approaching my ears, that I'm getting tension in my neck, which is where I usually carry it. That feeling is there all the time, but it's only when I intentionally focus on my body sensations that I'm able to notice that and then consciously do something to change it. I think the staying in the moment is extremely important in the face of not knowing what's going to happen. It's important to prepare. It's important to have the information. But for information that we have no ability to control, it's not healthy to obsess over that. And so we need to practice social distancing. We need to practice infection control. We need to do the things to keep ourselves safe. But focusing on what could happen is not going to help our bodies stay healthy today.
We're at the halfway point. We've already made it to the halfway point.
And, wow.
I know it goes so fast. Today I am talking to Dr. Yolanda Graham. She is the Senior Vice President and Chief Medical Officer at Devereaux Advanced Behavioral Health. And if you'd like more information about Devereaux and what it does, and it has a wealth of information and resources for any parent that anybody can access, and it is at devereaux.org. That's devereaux.org. I'm Laura Lewis. You're listening to Our Delaware Valley. Okay. What about children, though? Can they practice being in the moment? Especially children who have maybe now projected a future where their grandparents are in danger, or maybe their parents, maybe they're not worrying about themselves so much, but they hear that the older people are more adversely affected and they're scared for something that might happen.
Right. I think that's a great question, Laura. One of the things we recommend is this is a great opportunity to increase family contact. Kids are worried. They hear that older individuals with medical problems are more at risk. Those may be family members that are very close to them. So having regular contact, using applications where you can actually see the person and hear their voice, I think is extremely important. It provides that reassurance that they're okay, especially when they don't have physical contact with them. Kids also worry about their parents, and so and using social stories to talk to kids with developmental disabilities and also young kids who have been traumatized, you know, social stories allow you to normalize it so that we can think about what are other illnesses that we're faced with, and do your family members stay healthy through that, and what are the things they do to stay healthy so that kids know this is an illness, but there are other illnesses that we're able to successfully navigate, and it gives them a sense of control over that. But I do think we have to provide them with that information and that connection. And one of the things I mentioned, for Deborah, we have kids who live with us in group homes or residential settings that are separated from their families. So we're making every opportunity available to connect them with their family. We made a huge financial investment in purchasing iPads so that all of our homes have a way to visually connect with families. And this is important because we have a no visitation policy at this time as we try to manage the spread of the illness. Yet, we recognize that as parents ourselves, how critical it is to maintain that connection. So we're doing Zoom meetings with families so that they can see their children in real time. We're providing family with the resources that they need and helping them to access free internet if that's not available. We're also engaging in a campaign where we're seeking their consent now to take pictures of their kids, to send them pictures of their kids engaged in activities. It's something we don't usually do, but we recognize that that could be a meaningful connection to a family who doesn't have that day-to-day contact. And sending resources to families at home who have their children at home so that they have activities that they can engage in to help provide that structure that we were talking about.
You know, we didn't mention this, and we should have. I was very remiss in not saying, give us the overview, the elevator speech of Devereaux itself, and explain why you are the lady to go to right now.
Great. So Devereaux Advanced Behavioral Health is over 100 years old. We're one of the nation's largest behavioral health and educational organizations. We provide services to over 20,000 unique individuals annually through a wide variety of services and programs in 13 states. And our age range starts from birth through end of life in terms of the services that we provide, focus primarily on kids and adolescents with behavioral and emotional disorders and adults with autism and intellectual and developmental challenges, as well as kids who suffer from those same challenges.
And
so we provide services in outpatient, community-based, intensive wraparound, group home, acute inpatient, and residential treatment settings.
And that's what I was about to say. They are on campus, and then you provide services and educational opportunities for other children who come to your facilities.
Correct. And that is one of the big things that we're working on now. Federal regulations are changing quickly in terms of what we're allowed to do in providing educational resources. But we take our responsibility as educators seriously. And so we've already set up resources that we're sending to families, consultation that we're providing to families around managing their child in the home during school time. Now, with the recent change, we will be able to provide some of those educational resources using technology. So we're really excited about that. It's important for kids to be able to connect with adults in their lives who they have meaningful relationships with, and teachers and educators are certainly a big part of that during their school age years.
This is a crisis that will continue to wreak havoc with our norm for months to come, because kids are not going to finish their school year the way they should have, not the way that the old normal would have been. They're going to be in school longer, or they're going to have a huge gap and then have to return, and classes might be different. It might be a new school day as far as hours go. This is going to have a long rollout effect on a lot of things. So how do you prepare a kid for this, that maybe they're not going to have their old schedule back?
Right. That's a great question, because we really can't predict the future at this point. So I think I would go back to being mindful of where they are in the moment and setting up short-term expectations and routines. and talking about the fact that it really is an unknown if kids are able to maintain contact with kids in their classroom. I think that is really helpful, especially if they're doing virtual learning, because it gives that sense of connection. But the reality is, whether kids matriculate to the next grade, whether they have different teachers, all of that really is the unknown. So being able to acknowledge that uncertainty while providing the certainty of the structure that we can provide today, I think is the balance that we try to achieve.
This is kind of a terrible crash course in preparing for the future for all parents, really, because there will be personal crises in the future. No matter what, we'll get through all of this together that we're sharing, but every family always has, well, we're going to move, or grandpa is sick, and we need to prepare the child for the next step, the next thing that will happen. Is this a kind of a way we're all going to learn how to prepare for the future, or for to prepare for things that we are not going to look forward to?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think this pandemic has really helped us to look at what are our own resiliency factors, because we've already had to operate in ways that we have not imagined previously. But I do think we are going to have to prepare for the fact that many people will lose their jobs. Many people will lose their homes as a result of this. People will die or become affected by illnesses in ways that makes it difficult for them to recover. One of the real challenges in helping families to deal with grief that we've seen from other countries is that with the high mortality rate and social distancing, even the ways that families and cultures celebrate death have changed because of those restrictions. And so it doesn't allow that normal expression of grief and cultural traditions that, you know, would help a family move through that process in a way that they would expect to. So I do think that at the end of this pandemic, we will see that lives and families have really evolved in ways that will have grown stronger as a result of having to overcome those challenges. But also there will be a lot of fragmentation as a result of the uncertainty, and especially the financial uncertainty.
So we're dealing with a bunch of stressed out families now with kids who cannot always understand or comprehend what is happening around them. And you said the R word, resilience.
Right.
So how, if we can't learn it this week, how do we make a resilient kid that's going to come through this, not unscathed, but the best way possible?
Right. Well, Devereaux has some great resources for that. We have a center called the Devereaux Center for Resilient Children, where we actually teach families and educators through a resource called the Flip It curriculum for how do you build resilient kids? How do you help kids be able to strengthen their own innate resiliency factors? And we have a resource called Build Your Bounce, which is teaching educators and providers for how do you improve your own resiliency so that you can help kids in the face of a crisis such as this. So those are just two resources that we share those nationally. You can go to Devereaux's website and search for Devereaux Center for Resilient Children and find those resources. But that is extremely important to recognize that we're asking kids to behave in ways that are not expected of them daily, to keep themselves occupied 7 days a week instead of 2 days a week when they're out of school, to deal with their anxiety, to be able to express it, to still keep themselves motivated and encouraged, to understand what's going on in our country, and to do so appropriately. Well, that's not even easy for us. So imagine how challenging that is for a young child or a child who may understand and perceive the world differently. So resiliency is extremely important, not only for kids, but for adults.
What defines a resilient person?
I think a resilient person is one who is able to recognize their own protective factors and utilize those to navigate the world in a way where they're able to experience joy and success and confront challenges. So I think that is true for an adult, and for a resilient child is one who can keep going and find a degree of pleasure in the face of life's everyday challenges.
No kid is going to go untouched by this. In some fashion, every kid is being affected by what is happening right now. What kind of behaviors can we expect, and what should we be doing to get them back to the best place where they can be when they face the new normal and when we're through this on the other side?
Parents should expect that their it's likely to be a change in the way that kids interact with them and with the world. So it would not be surprising to find kids to be more clingy and more demanding. You may have kids that are normally engaged and outgoing who become more withdrawn and sullen. And certainly from a mental health perspective, that is a normal response to what is going on in terms of the change of their environment. When we start to get concerned is when that response starts to continue for weeks and months. And that's going to be a challenge in this time because we may be dealing with this for weeks and months. So we may see higher levels of clinical depression at the end of this just because of the longevity of people being socially isolated or dealing with the, you know, face of death for those who have been exposed. So this, I think, will be a lot more challenging than social disasters that happen and then the event is over and we get to recover. Our recovery won't begin for weeks or months from now.
So we're looking for long-term behavioral changes or attitude changes.
Right. That's what we're looking for in terms of what do you get concerned about. Short-term changes are to be expected. And what I recommend is to make sure that you're monitoring the changes in your child, and the way to do that is to make sure that there's family time where the family is engaged as a unit or you're talking with your child. That's the most important thing because having that interaction really provides a parent with the opportunity to balance what the child is feeling inside with what they're able to provide to them externally. So if a child is becoming more sullen and they're playing videos or watching TV all day and you're noticing this, it's a great time to schedule more family physical activities or virtual visits to the museum together so that there's that engagement and interaction.
So it keeps coming back around to creating a new routine of family time and just being mindful of how we're feeling and what we're doing right now.
Right, and providing those opportunities for the conversation to occur. I think the hardest thing for children is when they don't have the ability to express how they're feeling. And certainly for kids who are verbal, that happens in terms of conversation. For kids who are nonverbal, using art, using a sand tray, using Play-Doh, but ways for them to be able to express what they're feeling so that they're not holding all of those feelings inside. You know, as adults, we have different ways that we're able to deal with that. Kids have very limited ways to process stresses and anxiety.
And so parting words?
Parents, take care of yourself so that you're able to take care of your children. Give yourself permission to struggle through this pandemic and understand that if you're struggling, your kids are picking up on that and they're struggling as well. Be patient. Praise yourself and praise your child, knowing that at the end of this, we need both of you to be healthy in order to continue and face our new normal.
And of course, when we go to devereaux.org, we'll find resources there for you to help you get through this. And you'll find more information about the programming, all of the resources and services available through Devereaux Advanced Behavioral Health. And again, that is devereaux.org. And I want to thank my guest, Dr. Yolanda Graham. She is the Senior Vice President and Chief Medical Officer for Devereaux Advanced Behavioral Health. And thank you for being with us today.
You're welcome, Laura. Thank you.
We'll talk to you later, and we'll see you in person.
That's right. Next time in person.
In person. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.